Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. What a week we just had, everyone. International Fight Week has come to an end, capped off by UFC 317 and the brilliance of Ilya Topuria, who becomes the new lightweight champion with a perfectly predicted first-round knockout of Charles Oliveira. What a moment for him. Becomes the 10th fighter in UFC history to win titles in two weight classes and the first one to do it while undefeated. Just a remarkable feat for Topuria, who very much feels like he is growing into something special and perhaps a star in the UFC that is so badly needed at this moment. In order to react to everything that unfolded in that UFC 317 main event and to rank the 10 fighters in UFC history who have captured titles in two weight classes will be none other than the Underground King, Eddie Alvarez. He was one of the first people I thought in my mind when I'm like, here's a violent lightweight in Ilya Topuria. Who can react to him? Who can talk about him? Who can go through some of the history of the sport? Eddie Alvarez, a great mind to do so. Lovely conversation. And you guys, I think, will have a lot of fun listening to us go through our double champ rankings. And then on the back end of the show, stick around. I am going to unveil my half-year awards. Originally, this episode was going to be a half-year awards show with Megan O'Leary, who I did this with last year and who I thought was the perfect guest for this. We had it planned, but as I'm sure you saw with Megan on the broadcast for UFC 317, very much pregnant, could be in labor, could have had the baby already as this is going on right now as you listen to the show. Hopefully it's a safe and sound arrival, but I said, hey, Megan, you are the one that I like to do that show with. We are going to table it as far as the full podcast. We'll do it next year, but on the back end of the show, I'm going to give a few of my half-year awards away just to give you a little something to chew on as far as that without Megan here. And then after that, I'm going to reveal my first ever inaugural activity list for the UFC, who have been the most active fighters at the midway point as we sit here in 2025, and who is looking to have the busiest year of all in the UFC. I will share some notes, some stats that I have in that regard, and then we will close things out. So relax, enjoy. Please make sure to like, subscribe, rate, follow, anything you can do, whether it's audio or video platform, to support the show. We are doing our best to keep growing here. Thank you over on YouTube, past 3K subscribers. Let's keep pushing. Let's keep get that thing up. 10K by the end of the year would be the dream. So we'll take a quick break and be right back with Eddie Alvarez. And we are back here on the Bonfire Podcast with the first-time guest of the program, former UFC, former Bellator lightweight champion, one of the all-time greats, the king of violence, Eddie Alvarez. Eddie, how are you?
What's up, Mike? How's it going, man? Long time, no talk.
Yeah, it's been a minute, man, but I thought, like, you know, we're coming off this big performance by Ilya Topuria, obviously lightweight division, two division champion. I was like, you know, this man is creating violence in that cage. Who better to get their thoughts on what we saw on Saturday night than Eddie Alvarez?
Wild, man. I did my own breakdown with my team, like at our Performance Institute, and we were doing our own breakdown of it all. It's actually on my channel, like seeing kind of how I see how the fight would go, how Charles can get it done, how Ilya would get it done. I didn't account for Charles just walking in head first, not his hands, you know, not his hands up, it's kind of brutal, you know, not keeping his length the way I would have liked and stuff. But Charles is a dog, man. That's what he does. You know, that's how he kind of breaks guys. He walks into them like that. But a guy like Ilya, it's like, there's a very small margin for error against a guy like that who's at the top of his game. So he made him pay for sure.
Yeah, I had Dustin Poirier on last week, and his kind of breakdown was like, you know, Charles either needs to be all the way in or all the way out. He can't stay in that boxing range, and like, you need to be almost perfect in this fight, whereas it seemed like Ilya had a lot more room for, you know, risks and error and stuff like that. But yeah, do you feel like that was just Charles kind of fighting off instinct, like what he does, trying to be aggressive, or did he make a bad fight IQ error that led to that, you think?
I think Charles pretty much marches right into people like that, toot the box, that let's go, let's, and against a guy like Topuria, anybody with really good sharp boxing, you can't make good fundamental boxing mistakes against them. They make you pay, and usually you figure that out in training against really good boxers, what you can do, what you can't do, and then you make the adjustments there. but we got to see some really bad fundamental boxing get exposed inside the cage. Usually, like I said, you kind of fix all that inside the gym. You know, you don't walk at people head first. You got to lead with your hands. You got to keep your weight back a little bit. One thing about Topuria that he's excellent at is his positioning and his balance. It's like flawless. It reminds me of like, they're not the same, but if you want to learn how to box, you used to watch Oscar De La Hoya back in the day because it was so perfect. He was so perfect. So it's like if you want to teach somebody how to box, hey, watch Oscar De La Hoya in his prime. Topuria has perfect weight distribution, keeps his head back, kind of keeps a 60-40 split with weight distribution on his feet. He's nice and tight, stays a little bit angled enough to where you don't have a target. It's really nice. And if you're trying to break down fights or want to learn how to fight, just kind of watching a guy like that. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes position-wise.
What was your expectation like when you did the breakdown of his path to victory? And I know it's only a 2.5 minute fight, but how much of that did he implement in order to achieve the knockout that he got?
So in my breakdown, I guaranteed my team that Charles would get put down. I said that in my breakdown. But the determinant factor was me. It was, is Topuria going to follow up? Because a lot of guys didn't follow up. They put him down. They put him down. Everybody who put him down. Chandler did, all them guys. But they were so afraid of that web that he has of his guard that they didn't follow up. They gave Charles a second life. And he's not a guy you can give too many second lives to. So Charles was able to come back and reel back and beat them. In this case, there was no follow-up needed. You know, the guy has dynamite in his hands. He put him out cold, and that was that. But it was a great shot. Charles led with his head, not with his hands. Topuria punched with him. He punched like he assumed Charles was going to punch. He got his head off right a little bit, and he has a beautiful like right hand that has no tell on it, like literally no tell. He throws it very quick. It's very fast. And then he got right hand, left hook, and done picture perfect. Nothing fancy. Good fundamentals, and that was that. It was like when a tornado meets a volcano, and it was like, boom, the two collided in the ring like that, you know. But hats off to both of them, man. They're both warriors. It doesn't take shit away from Charles. He'll still kill almost every lightweight out there, and Topuria was just on his game.
Yeah, he seems to be on his game every single time he's stepped in that cage so far, undefeated. The first guy, as we'll get into later when we talk about our double champs list, to win belts in two divisions while undefeated the whole way. So, like, that's a pretty extraordinary thing to do. What do you think? This a lot of talk here about is beating Volkanovski, Max Holloway, and Charles Oliveira all by knockout, all in a row. Is that like the best three fight winning streak you can recall in MMA?
I was pulling up to the gym today, and I was like, I was talking to my son Anthony about it for a little bit, but I started like thinking, like really pondering it, like how hard it is just to beat them three guys in a row. If you can just, let's say you got three decisions against them guys, that would kind of go down as like, damn, you beat three of the best guys in the world consecutively, you know, but to put them away, to eliminate them, to a flawless victory like that, like each of them, man, special. And I've heard stuff from the Killcliff guys about him in the gym. And usually you can get a good gauge in the gym, you know. What goes on out in the cage there, it's just a byproduct of what really goes on in the gym. But in the gym, you'll hear the stories like, hey, this guy's this and this guy's that, and nobody can really beat him. And he's a guy who he does it in the gym, and when the lights get on him, he doubles it, does it even better. So I feel like he still has a lot of life in him. Like probably I know he don't want to fight till wants to be done by 30, but everybody wants to be done by 30. I think I said that too. So he's got another good 5 years in him. And arguably right now with this run, if he stays on the same path, we could be looking at like an all-time great. So we'll see how the next five go, you know?
Yeah, we will see. And like you said, yeah, hard to walk away at 30. And especially now, this is when you start making actual money that can be, you know, generational and stuff. So hard to walk away at that point. But
us fighters are like artists, man. They pay us when we're dead.
Yeah, it could not be more true. No kidding. But what you said, you know, it seems to be something special. He's the only one doing what he's doing right now. Like, I came across the stat leading into this fight, there had been 13 straight UFC fights without a knockout. There hadn't been a single title fight knockout in the UFC this year. The last finish by strikes was Jones against Stipe Miocic in November. And the last finish in a title fight by strikes before that was Topuria versus Max Holloway. So, like, we know what the fans love in the sport. They crave the violence. They want to see the knockouts. They want to see that happen at the highest level. He's quite literally the only one doing that right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, they got to get more guys like Joey Pfeiffer out there who throw with evil intentions. It should have been if Kevin Gastelum didn't have such a freaking chin, Joey would have been able to get somebody out of there. But man, knockouts, that's what the fans want. Home runs, baby.
Exactly. What would be the most interesting fight for you to see Ilya in against next? Let's assume Islam Makhachev is staying at welterweight. That's out of the running next. Is it Paddy Pimblett, who came into the cage for the face-off? Is it Armin Sarukian, who's ranked number one and had the title shot before he fumbled it earlier this year? Or Justin Gaethje, who, you know, legend of the sport, kind of wants it based off the whole career resume, one more shot before he's done?
Selfishly, I want Justin, you know what I mean? He's a fan favorite of mine. Like, unbiased, just watching MMA, I want to see a Justin Gaethje fight before any other fight. Just because of the way he fights. This matchup for Justin, I'd want Justin to be a little more calculated, a little bit less reckless abandonment against a guy like this, a guy that's dangerous, and this guy, a guy who's this planet and good positioning. I think the Armin fight really intrigues me. I think that might be a little bit of a tougher matchup for Ilya, the Armin. Challenge wise, to keep that belt and to keep things, everything pride and true. If that belt wants to stay, I think Armin would be the biggest challenge for him right now in the division. But funnest fight, fans, it's Justin Gaethje and him for sure.
Yeah, I've been trying to.
And I would like to see how, because I don't care who you are, I love when Justin just starts landing that leg kick and watch really strong, violent men start to limp around or start to switch south pole. And like he can do it against anyone. So Justin can beat anyone at any time with that weapon of his. He just smashes lead leg.
For sure. No, I think that'd be fascinating, that matchup. I kind of agree what you said there. I think, like, meritocracy-wise, Armin, most exciting fight, Justin, and then probably the fight that sells the most or is the most promotable is Paddy, but I think that may be the least competitive of the three. So just kind of depends, like, again, and Justin might not be around that much longer. He's the last of, you know, the violence era with you and Poirier and everything. Like, would like to see him get one more chance, because I think Armin and Paddy will be here for years to come. Justin won't be, so take advantage of the time.
Yeah, and you don't, if you're UFC, you don't kill off a star. You know, Paddy's a star in the making. Ilya's a star in the making. You don't put them together right now. Now's not the time. It'd be like, you know, shooting yourself in the foot. You know, Paddy's going to be his own star. Keep building him. Ilya is going to be one. They can both be one. It reminds me of when I think GSP and Anderson Silva were being talked about to fight each other, but the UFC wasn't allowing it. It's like, hey, we can have two stars instead of just killing one off. And I don't think it'd be good business for the UFC to have them two fight this early.
Quite honestly, I think that's how we got in this situation anyways. Like, I don't think they wanted Islam and Ilya to fight each other. They wanted to have the two champions. Like, I think I did a podcast like 6 months ago where we were ranking the most valuable fighters on the UFC roster, and they were one and two. So, like, why are you going to put them against each other and kill off an asset like that? But I guess with the Paddy side, people are like, either do it now when you have the chance, like, is he actually good enough to get one more against a Justin or an Armin? And if he loses, then you lose that fight. So I think that's maybe the reason.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's if you're here now and just trying to make a boatload of money cash right now, do it, you know, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. You're, I saw Demetrius Johnson say he thought like that whole face off and that whole fight just felt like forced. What was your vibe watching that? Like, did it feel, you know, get you excited, or did it feel like that we're kind of just trying to cram this fight down our throats a little bit?
I don't think the UFC did. I think Paddy, I want to say Paddy did that on his own accord. I don't think Dana would lie about it. He said he didn't coordinate it, but yeah. Look, maybe he didn't set it up, but maybe he didn't stop it either. Because if UFC don't want you in the cage, you're not getting in the cage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So exactly. Yeah, maybe they didn't set it up, but they didn't stop it either. So, but I don't think, just right now, I think both of them still got a lot of life. There's a lot of money to be made in different markets. One in Spain, and the UK. Paddy's in the UK. It's good. Yeah. It's good to have stars all around the world so they can meet the fans. I just don't know if it's good business to just kill one that's on the rise like that. So and
yeah,
with the way them two fight, you know, something bad's gonna happen.
Yeah, and quite literally, as we speak, I just saw a clip get posted on X from a Dricus du Plessis video blog, and he said apparently Justin versus Paddy is the co-main for Chicago in a couple months here. So but maybe they've been working on something behind the scenes. I don't want to say I haven't, you know, investigated, but Dricus did say that on a video blog. I heard they wanted that fight in Abu Dhabi, so maybe they pushed up the timeline, but we'll see. I'm not
officially declaring that. Where at? Here in the States they're going to have it?
That would be in Chicago, yeah, October 6th or August 16th. The co-main for Du Plessis and Chimaev.
I might be heading there for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Close trip.
Me and my boys are gonna be there.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel like last thing on Ilya, as I said off the top, you know, there was this amazing era of lightweights that you were a part of, and it felt like we kind of lost that a little bit. Is this a guy who, you know, can bring back at least a little bit of that, you know, personification? Like, maybe he's not getting in the three round wars, but he's going in there and hurting people and, you know, leaving a trail of bodies in his way.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely the torch has been passed, you know, as far as level, all around skill, you know, everything. I'd like to see him get wrestled. That's why I want to see him with Armin. I do want to see him in more of a wrestling fight. Someone who can make him have to transition to wrestling to striking to see where his spirit's at there, because we can tell a lot about a guy when he's forced to have to go up and down and up and down and still be able to keep a good fight and good cardio and a good spirit. So I'd like to see him in more of a fight like that, to see him tested a little bit. I thought Charles was going to be able to do that with him, like be able to test him in that way, but I was wrong.
Yeah, we'll see if it's the next one. It's a fascinating time. I guess before we move on from lightweights, in a few weeks here, the next pay-per-view that's headlined by Dustin Poirier's retirement fight against Max Holloway. How do you think that one goes?
Damn. You know, like, Dustin beat him twice already, right? Beat Max twice. Yeah. Here's the thing with retirement fights and when people announce them that I don't like. This is what I don't like. People, if you are saying I'm done, right, then you're already done. And there's this small little thing in your mind where you've checked out. Even if you trained really hard and you put your best camp in and all that, and this is a sport where you have to be all in mentally, physically, emotionally. And I never like when guys pre-commit to being finished and then still fighting their last fight. When over time, as I watched that happen, the guy I watched, maybe it could be like 70, 80% of the time, that guy doesn't win.
Good. You're saying 78% of the time that guy.
I think like 70, 80% of the time, like in the past, when I see guys announce that this is their last fight, like in your mind, you already know I'm done fighting. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the right mentality to go into the competition with, you know, I just don't know. I don't like it. And I never feel good about it for guys who pre-commit to their retirement before a fight. So the style matchup, I mean, I think Dustin wins the fight, mm-hmm. Max is not a pushover for anyone. So it's going to be a beautiful boxing match. Some of the best boxing, you know, we're going to see inside the cage.
Yeah. And Max had, he's got all the motivation. He had a cold ass line on the promo. I think he said, you took my undefeated record. You took my 13 fight winning streak. I'm going to take your retirement fight. So there's good motivation there on both sides. So we'll see how that one goes. But, Eddie, the main reason I had you here today was coming off of Ilya Topuria's title win. Of course, there's now been 10 fighters who have won belts in 2 different weight classes in the UFC, and I want us to rank them because I thought maybe it would be easier than it was off the top. Then I started going through it and it was actually a bit of a challenge, but I guess the thing I'll lay out here first for the listeners is I basically gave an open criteria of saying, you know, rank these how you want. I guess before we get into it, Eddie, what criteria did you take upon yourself to try to organize this list?
I always go off of time, like greatness to me, if you're the greatest, it's about the opponents you take on, the like how dangerous the opponents you took on were and how long you did it. They're usually my two criteria. Like you have to have a serious necklace of skulls around your neck of all the kings you took over, and then you've had to do it for a long time, because it's, I don't want to say it's easy. Become ranked or top in the world, but it's very difficult to keep it. And it's very difficult to stay with that level of commitment, that level of discipline for a long period of time. And I always respect that from the people that have done it. It's a really hard character to stay in.
For sure. And especially across 2 weight classes. I mean, capturing a belt in one in the sport is hard enough. So to do it twice in 2 different divisions is remarkable. And I guess on my side, I tried to do all encompassing. I kept bringing myself back to just like who had the best performances to win the titles in the 2 different divisions. Like that was kind of what I ended up at. So we'll see how these compare. We might have radically different lists here, Eddie. So I'm fascinated. But just for the people to educate them a little bit, bear with me here, Eddie. I'm just going to read out the list and who they beat to get there. So the first of the 10 was Randy Couture. He won his first title at light heavyweight against Maurice Smith at Ultimate Japan in 1997. His second title at light heavyweight, unified an interim belt with Tito Ortiz at UFC 244 in September 2003. Randy Couture, a very unique one here. He won the belts multiple times in each division, so that kind of made him different. BJ Penn won his first title against Matt Hughes, rear naked choke, UFC 46, January 2004. Then his second title at lightweight beat Joe Stevenson, rear naked choke, UFC 80, January 2008. Conor McGregor was the third, defeated Jose Aldo to unify the title at UFC 194 in December 2015, defeated my guest here, Eddie Alvarez, to win his second belt at UFC 205, November 2016. Amanda Nunes defeated Misha Tate to win the women's bantamweight title. Chris Cyborg to win the women's featherweight title. George St. Pierre, Matt Hughes, head kick knockout in 2006 to win the welterweight belt. 11 years later, defeated Michael Bisping, UFC 217. Then Daniel Cormier, Anthony Johnson at light heavyweight, Stipe Miocic at heavyweight, Henry Cejudo, Demetrius Johnson at flyweight, Marlon Moraes at bantamweight, Alex Pereira, Israel Adesanya at middleweight, Yuri Prohoshka at light heavyweight, John Jones, Mauricio Shogun Hua in 2011 at light heavyweight, and then Ciryl Gane at heavyweight, and then Ilya Topuria defeats Alexander Volkanovski at UFC 298 in February by knockout, and then Charles Oliveira this past weekend. Okay, Eddie, thanks for sticking with me through that. I guess let's give you the floor to kick things off. Who did you have at number 10? So we'll start at 10 and count downwards.
I had Alex at 10. just because it's kind of I didn't want to be like a recency bias. He's a superstar now, but like I said, it's about like taking on greats, true greats, and doing it for a long period of time. So I think he was probably, not to say he's not great, but I think he probably had the maybe the easier list to get to the title and hasn't done it for a long time yet. So I had Alex.
Okay, interesting. Already parity. I had him much higher, so we'll see how that compares. Okay. My number 10, I had Randy Couture. Again, I thought, you know, legendary career, won the belt multiple times in multiple divisions. But, you know, we're going back to the very old school when he first won those titles. As I said, I kind of more leaned on the performances, the opponents.
I already know right now we're going to have complete opposite lists because
I love it.
I have the opposite of a recency bias. I'm for the legends. So they're higher. They're higher up my list just because I feel like the sport was a little different. People weren't picking opponents, and so
that's true.
Maybe it's just my own bias toward them, but let's keep going.
No, this is perfect. Honestly, I think I had him at 7 to first, then I keep mixing it up. You'll probably be pissed at my number 9, but we'll go to your 9 first, Steady.
My 9 was Henry.
Henry Cejudo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Henry Cejudo.
Yeah.
Even though that was tough. That was tough for me only because I consider DJ the GOAT. Demetrius is my GOAT and he beat him. So he probably should be higher up my list. It was just, this list is just really difficult to, it is. It really is. I could change it 5 different times if you gave me more time to do it.
No, 1,000,000%. I agree. This is not a perfect practice. You know, we reserve the right to change in the future. Obviously, like I said, open criteria. So there's no wrong answers here. If I had said something specific, maybe we could have picked it apart. But yeah. I think we both laid it out well there. Okay, my number 9, people probably not going to like this. It is John Jones. And like I said, based off what I had, I mean, John Jones, like...
How does that happen? Come on.
So the light heavyweight title win. I mean, I'm not accounting his entire light heavyweight title reign.
You're saying because the second belt was against Ciryl Gane and that was it.
The heavyweight one really drags him down, in my opinion. Like, you know, Ciryl Gane, he offered little to no resistance. You got to give John his credit for that. He got the neck, he got the submission, but I don't know. It just felt very void on anything, that heavyweight run. And then, you know, if you want to go all the way back to 2011, Mauricio Shogun, who was one of my favorite fighters ever, he's one of the reasons I got into the sport.
He's at my gym this weekend.
Is he? Okay, yes. I love that. Even better. Like, you know, even in 2011, he was the world champion. Like, he was on the back end of his career, and I know he fought 10 more years, but his knees were nothing. Like, if he had beat him in 2007, maybe we're having a different conversation. But yeah, youngest champion, all that stuff. It's tough. Just in the champ list, this was an all-time champion list. Maybe he's 2 or 1, but for this one, I'm putting him at number 9. Sorry, John. While we're on him, just quickly, what do you think of the whole everything that happened, not fighting Tom Aspinall and opting to retire instead?
I think he's earned that right. I do. You can't tell a guy when he wants to be done. I feel like we've been lucky enough for him to get in the octagon for that long. You know what I mean? Regardless of what he's done outside the cage, this and that, nobody's asking me about that. So I'm not going to talk about it. But sure. If you're asking me about pure performance and competitiveness and ability to win, I mean, I really don't see anyone even close. It's just a whole different competitiveness mentality that he has that I think it's just different. And I don't think there's always going to be another guy. There's always going to be another dragon to slay. This sport never goes away, especially if you're great. It never goes away. Someone's always going to call you and go, hey, and the fans are always going to go, we think this guy can get you. And it's like, yeah, I know. It's never going to end. So it's really up to the individual to go, when am I willing to put my sword down and just let the other dragons fly around, right? I think that's up to him. I think he's earned that. I think he's been dominant enough to say when he wants to fight and when he doesn't want to fight. So
yeah, I think that's fair. It's a complicated situation. There's a lot of money on the table, but hey, if he's willing to pass that up, that's completely within his right. And he seems to think his brand and his work and everything he's done will, you know, give him a lifespan long after fighting. So
I'm not
lose, they, fans go away. You know how.
I think John without fighting is not going to be good. I think he needs it. And it's the fact that he's champion's gotten him out of a lot of trouble, and without it, there can be an unraveling. And I don't want to see the unraveling, and I don't think any of the fans do either. I think the sport, he needs the sport, and too long out of it, you know, is not going to be good for him, I don't think.
I definitely agree. And this is maybe like the saddest segue I could do ever, but I'll go back to back here and go into number eight, who I think is a person who experienced much of those same things. That is BJ Penn. I obviously like his Matt Hughes win puts him very high up. The Joe Stevenson win for a vacant belt being reintroduced, like, you know, he bloodied him. It was an amazing performance, but like Joe Stevenson, we're not sitting here talking about him as one of the great lightweights of all time. So I think that's just where I put him. But yeah, man, just based off going off what you said there, like BJ Penn admitted that for years, right? Like when we all said he should have stopped, he said, I need to keep going. Like this gives me structure. This gives me everything I need in my life doing this sport. And look how things are for him now when he lost that completely. I mean, I know maybe not completely related, but it's sad to see.
Yeah. I had him higher up. I actually,
who's your eight?
My eight was Connor.
My eight was Connor. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. I'm going to X these out as I go because I'm confused here.
Yeah, sure.
There we go.
Wow. Connor at eight. I thought he was going to be higher just based off maybe some personal bias.
No,
because
he beat the greatest lightweight of all time. The true greatest. No, man. No, I just think it was time. I think it's, for me, I'm so time biased. Like, do great things. You got to do them for a while. You know, that's real. That's
zero title defenses.
That's real greatness. Like, and that's a big part of my criteria is like, you can do something great and like a lot of people are going to say, hey, that you're lucky. You know, you're lucky you broke the top three. But if you just do it for so long, no one can really deny it. It's like, I'm here and I've been here. To me, that's the true mark. So I had him there.
I think that's fair based off your criteria for your list, especially I think scanning through now, I'll give myself an absent to maybe be wrong, but I think he's the only person of these 10 who'd never defended a title in either of the divisions.
Yeah, he did. So. He got the belt and then he didn't.
Yeah, no, I know he did, and I was just thinking of anyone else here, but I think everyone else on this list has at least one title defense to their name. So I think that's fair then, based off, you know, what you laid out is your criteria. So I dig that. Go back to back here, Eddie. Who'd you have at seven?
Seven I had, and look, super, super high on this guy. Like, obviously, you heard the way I talked about him earlier, but I had Ilya just because he's new. Like I said, the list of guys he's beaten these are all-time greats he's beaten in a row, but I want to see more. I want to see a longer length of time. That's all. I just want to see like a few more years of being great. And then we can mark him. I think he's hard to mark right now. He's just so brand new. I think some people right now would be like number one. Like they'll say number one.
He might be talking to one of them. We'll see.
He fought a few. Yeah. Because he's fought. You know, he just fought what 3 days ago or whatever. So
yeah. No, I know the recency bias is tough, especially like, again, I think with your criteria that you laid out, these are all totally fair. I had him higher just based off the actual performances to get those two belts, but yeah, fascinating stuff there. At six for me, I had George St. Pierre, who maybe I could have put a little higher, but I think this is the range where it was really tough, like 6-3 kind of thing. You know, his win over Matt Hughes is one of my favorite title fight performances, the head kick and, you know, the ground and pound with the elbows. That's like an iconic finish. The Bisping one, I mean, it's all these years later. It was a one-off. Like it's really hard to put stock into that second title. Like even John Jones defended his heavyweight belt, GSP, I think. has the shortest title reign in UFC history at 33 days after he vacated due to health issues, all that stuff. But like, he did the right thing. He didn't hold the belt hostage, but yeah, it's just hard for me to put him super high up there for the double champ list, just given his super limited one fight at middleweight.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Any disagreement? What do you have at six?
I got Randy at six. Same. For a lot of the same reasons you did. It was a while ago. It was a while back. I am like biased toward Randy just because he did it so late in his life. I think he was 40. What was Randy? 40. Mid 40s.
When he won his last title. Yeah. When he won his last title, when he came back and beat Tim Sylvia, I think he was 43. I think when he won his first title, he was like 34.
Yeah.
So
you're not
like, he didn't start training, I think, till 30.
People don't understand how difficult that is. You know, that later on in your life to take on the young, hungry competition like that and do it for the length of time they did it. I'm biased toward the old UFCs, man. It's like I grew up as a kid watching them, so it's hard for me not to. Maybe it's in my head. Maybe there's no criteria to it. It's just the fan in me. Like when I was a kid watching these guys, like they're more my heroes than these new guys.
Oh, dude, totally. That's not even like debatable. It's the fighters of your generation, the one before, and, you know, connected with the fans so much more. And that's why some of these guys stick around and they're still sellable and all that stuff. But yeah, the first pay-per-view I ever ordered with friends had seen UFC before was Kator Liddell 3.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, yeah, some of the most iconic fights of the 2000s.
I had to get him a Blockbuster, man. At Blockbuster had...
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's how I'm showing my age now. We used to go to Blockbuster and rent them and then watch the UFCs.
Exactly. I remember those same. My mom wouldn't let me get them for years. She made me get the pro wrestling ones. And then finally the day came where it was like, okay, you can rent the UFC DVDs. Okay, we're cracking into the top five here. I will go with my five first. I have Alex Pereira at number five. And I know you spoke the limited work. I give him massive points for... I might have skipped my seven. I had Henry Cejudo at seven, GSP at six, Alex Pereira at five, and him ending Israel Adesanya's title reign, that gets big points, you know, like one of the all-time title reigns in middleweight history. Mm-hmm. If you can bring that to an end, given their history and all that stuff, that's big points. And then going up to 205 and almost more impressive what he did there, the three title defenses in like 6 months.
Yeah.
Like that, you get huge points for that. So I have Alex at five.
Okay.
Who's your number five?
I had DC. No, I didn't. Oh, I had BJ Penn at five.
BJ Penn.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's a great one.
Growing, like, it got to, I was a fan of BJ, and then I was on a path to possibly maybe fight BJ. So like he's always sort of been in my life or being my be on my radar. So I've always looked up to him. I've always watched his work, and like for him to do not only even I think back in Japan he even fought higher. I think he fought Lyoto Machida in Japan. I could be wrong.
At heavyweight.
Yeah,
he did at heavyweight.
All right, so outside of the titles and jumping from here and jumping from there, this is a guy who literally, as far as like expanding across MMA to fight at heavyweight, to fight at welterweight, to fight at lightweight against the best guys in the world like he has, and doing it for so long, I think it's hard not to put him up there. So BJ was my next.
Yeah, I think that's a great choice too. Definitely deserves to be in that top five. I had him a little higher, just like I said, based on my criteria. But man, it's sad though to see what has happened to BJ Penn. And I know you've been always very open and honest about the realities of the sport. And you know, anyone who wants to know, you know, what can come with that, just look at what's going on with him. And I hope he can find his peace and, you know, happiness and get things back on track, because it's really sad.
Yeah.
Okay, number four here. I'll go on number four. I had the only female on this list, Amanda Nunes.
Me too.
Gets me there at number four. I mean, she's your four as well.
Yeah, I agreed with you.
Finally, some alignment here.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you say? Like, obviously, what she did against Miesha Tate at UFC 200 was a great win. Miesha was on top of the world then, but I think what really pushes her is the knockout of Chris Cyborg in a minute at 145. I mean, Cyborg hasn't been beaten since, wasn't beaten before. She absolutely destroyed her. I know the women's featherweight division has always been kind of a farce in the UFC, but she kept it alive. She would win fights there. She is the only fighter to hold two belts simultaneously and go back and forth and defend them both while keeping both. So she has history and records and things that no one else has done.
Yeah. I got Amanda there too. And on top of that, she's just an amazing human being. And then there's, look, there's stories of her knocking guys clean out at ATT. That's, she's a bad one, man. So Amanda deserves everything she gets. She's great. She's great.
What do you think of a fight between her and Kayla, especially with her coming back after a few years of being retired? Is that too much to bite off in the comeback, or do you think she wins that one?
Yeah, I think both of them know how that goes, and the fact that Kayla wants that fight makes me think maybe she got over on some rounds on her and knows I can get her in some way. But I don't like people who take that time off. Fighting is not something you can just put away and then grab and take back and put away. That'll never go good for someone doing that. So like, you have to be all in with it or all out. You can't pack it up, put it away, and then grab it when you want it. That's not how it works. You end up getting really badly, like either knocked out or the fights don't go well for you. So like, anybody who took that much time off should just stay off. Cause I describe it like, it's almost like being in character, like a movie role. You have to stay in character for as long as you can, because if you get out of character, it takes time to get back into it again. And I just think once you're out, you're out. You're no longer that guy anymore. Because if you're not out of fighting even for like 3 months and you don't train, you're completely different than what you were at your peak. 6 months go by, 9 months go by, you don't even know who that guy was anymore. So it's like, if you have years go by, you have to really build that character again, who that savage is. And it's just tough to do. I wouldn't recommend her doing it.
Yeah, I'm curious what she'll look like, where her motivations are, all that stuff. So we shall see. But let's get into our top three, Eddie, to round things out here. Who did you have at number three on your list?
I had DC.
Same here.
My boy DC.
Yeah.
Pretty epic. And when you talk about the people he's done it against and the time he's done it, I mean, DC could arguably be two, you know, but for me, it could be two for me. And when you see my two, you're going to be upset that I put him in front of DC, but that's just my own bias. But
we'll get to that in a moment. I had DC at three as well. You know, like the light heavyweight stuff is always interesting because there's the John Jones cloud. Like, would he have ever even got that belt if John could stay on the straight and narrow and all those things? But the heavyweight one, holy crap, can't take anything away from that. He knocked out Stipe Miocic in the first round in his prime on a huge stage. So that one's big. But yeah, man, like, you know, he got his first title with the submission of the late Anthony Johnson, who was one of the scariest fighters I've ever seen compete in the sport. And he hurt DC and he got through the fire and managed to get him down and submit him. So like, that is, in any context, a very quality win. It's just the weird John Jones situation, but I don't want to hurt him too much on that, because, you know, you could take a lot away from John Jones's credentials if you really want to. So
yeah,
good with DC there. Okay, my number two, since you've already spoke him out, I put Conor McGregor. This was tough. that puts Ilya at number one. But yeah, I mean, if we're talking the way he won the title, the Jose Aldo knockout, I mean, what more can you say? The fastest knockout ever in the history of UFC title fights. And then, you know, his performance against you was remarkable. You know, I think that night was one of the more unbeatable fighters I've seen. So you would be able to speak to that better than me. But are you, I know, like all the title defenses, your criteria was great. If we were going anything beyond my scope, he would be further down the list. But in terms of the two performances that won the two titles, it's hard to top.
Conor in his prime, was, I mean, almost like Ilya, like really scary guy. When he was in the gym, He didn't care about any other stuff, and he was just fixated on fighting and wanting to beat the best guy. He's a scary human being and was, like, one of the best fighters in the world. So, like, there's no denying that. And, look, at that point in my of my career, I was great, and he, look what he's done to me. I was coming off a great win with Rafael Dos Anjos, arguably one of the best lightweights in the world at the time. You can't argue. He could be anywhere in this list in the top five, and there's no way you can argue what he's did. The only thing that I want, like I said, my criteria and what I did, what I based it on was length of time. Like, how you can be great, but how long were you great? Like, how long can you stay great? So he was further down my list because of that. Like, it was like, win a world title, when he said, like he said, I'm going to win these world titles, grab money, and I'm going to fucking bounce. And that's what he did. But for me, on my list, like, you just didn't stay in it long enough to be able to make it further up that list.
Totally fair. I guess just one follow-up question. Like, on that night, can you prepare, you watch the tape, all that stuff, when you're in there with a guy who seems like, you know, it's just, they're on, everything's clicking. Do you notice that right away? Like, is there something you can tell? It's like, oh, this is even different than what I expected through my months of preparation.
No, I probably would have boxed more in lead up, like did more boxing. 'Cause I did a lot of boxing for the Justin Gaethje fight. I did a lot of boxing, and it was one of my best performances when I did a lot of boxing with just pro boxers. I just kind of got out of the MMA gym and just went down in Philly and got with pro boxers, and that sort of, my eyes were the best, my reactions were the best, my timing, my punch volume, everything got better. So, like, probably would have boxed more in the preparation and boxed less in the fight. You know what I mean? Like, so my eyes, my distance would have been sharper boxing wise, but the idea was never to box. And I feel like I just got caught early in the fight and I went stupid. Like, what I did in the fight was nothing what we did in the lead up in the preparation, you know? Even in the fight, I'm circling toward the left hand a ton. And it's like, that was like step 101, day one. Hey, let's go right mostly and wrestle and kick. And instead I went left and I boxed, and it was like, sometimes you just get punched and you go stupid in a fight, and that's just how the cookie crumbles. You don't have a lot of, like I said, it's small margin for error when guys are at the top of the game.
Yep, it's insane once you're actually in there. Not speaking from any experience myself, but I've heard from enough of you guys to say that I can trust that's true. Okay, Eddie, let's close this thing out here. Who was your number two and subsequently number one?
I got GSP.
Number two?
GSP was number two. And look, he's been my all-time favorite. For me, he's a pioneer of the sport. And it has more... I don't want to say less to do with the people he's beat, but at that time, he was one of the first, like, mega, mega crossover superstars. Right. Maybe Chuck Liddell was before him or something like that, but, like, GSP was
globally, GSP. Up here in Canada. I mean, like, yeah, he was the cookie cutter, like, you know, best possible look for MMA.
And I think he changed the face of the sport. You know, they had a lot of big trouble making this a sport, you know, that to changing people's minds that it's not human cockfighting. These people are athletes and they want to compete and they're good people. George did that for the UFC. He turned this into a sport. He made it professional. He made us look like human beings. You know, what he did for the sport was, nothing short of amazing. So I got him at number two, and he did it for a long time, and he did it against other greats. So I got George there. And look what he did. He put it away. He said, I don't want to do it anymore. And still was able to come back and beat Bisping. And I think George knew the style matchup was a lot, very beneficial to him. And he came back and did what he had to do. But still, it's very difficult to do that, to put the sport away and come back and still be successful. and he was able to do that later on in his career. So Georgia will always be near and dear to my heart.
For sure. And that that leaves your number one, who maybe in terms of being the best possible representative of the sport, John Jones was not that, but I'm sure you have. Yeah, there you go.
There he is.
Love that. Yeah.
Yeah, regardless of how me and him align as human beings, it doesn't matter. If you're great, you're great. You didn't ask me how I felt about any of these guys as human beings. You asked me was who's the greatest in on this list. And he kind of like Ilya, to do what he's done against the greatest, to dispatch them the way he's done, and for the period of time he's done it for, I think it's not even to be argued. But me and you will argue it. But really, really difficult. Super competitive guy, and like, he's an anomaly, man. He's got a gift that he's got a gift that nobody else on this roster has.
No, he's truly special. Has dismantled multiple eras, the guys who came before him, with him, and after him, and after those. So like, he's put together a truly special career, John Jones.
You know what it reminds me of? What Tyson said to Francis Ngannou. That's what he says. You're blessed by God. You're favored by God, he told Ngannou. But he said that also means you're favored by the devil. And sure. And he said, make sure you leave the dance with the guy who got you there. And it's like, truer words never been spoken, especially in the world of MMA. It's like, make sure you stay with God, you know what I mean? Especially as much as you speak of him, it's like, come on, man, just do it.
Yeah, that is facts. And I guess just close it out, Ilya Topuria was number one on my list. I know it's probably a lot of recency bias, but I, have witnessed, I guess, this more so than some of the other ones. I was actually here covering the sport for pretty much all of these, maybe except for BJ and Randy when they happened, but I was watching. But yeah, I mean, get them both by knockout in such a close proximity. The two guys he beat, and Charles, a former champion, and then Volkanovski was, at top of his game. Maybe question marks about did Islam kind of do some damage and punch that ticket a little bit for him. So you could raise questions about anyone on here, but I don't know, man. Him and Connor, those two performances in the two divisions are pretty high up there. I guess Ilya did defend that 45 belt against Max Holloway. First person to knock him out as well. So that kind of adds a lot of credence into this argument as well. But it could fluctuate, but I feel pretty good about this for now.
Didn't put a lot of criteria on time in the game. You basically were like, they got the belt, who the opponents were,
and that's that's what I tried to narrow it down to, because if I did it like whole thing, I was throwing them all over the place. Got I was it. Moving Jones from 10 to 1 to 3. It's just like,
and
it's hard,
so. In as little as a year, Topuria has two more performances. He could be number one. He could go from number six or seven, whatever he was, to number one. I just want to see it a little bit longer. You know what I mean? I want to see him more. That's all. I want
to
see him more.
For sure. No, these lists are completely open to adjustment, but I thought it was a perfect time to do it just because we're now at 10, so we can actually create a true top 10 list. Yeah. So this might be the first, Eddie. Everyone else can work off our homework here. We'll see who they like yours or better in the comments. Before I get you out of here, Eddie, we didn't talk too much about you. I know it's been like a little over 5 months since your last fight. Mm-hmm. You know, you were making some decisions after that. You talk a lot today about, putting things on the shelf and not taking them out. Where's your mind at as far as your future as a competitor in combat sports?
I'm kind of open to whatever, but like right now, I opened up a performance institute in Newtown, Pennsylvania, the Underground Kings, and I'm kind of building my team and membership. Like, we have members like galore in the course of like 4 or 5 months. It's been like really fun. It's a hangout for me and my boys and my kids. Just a place to like kind of hang out, kind of learn to fight. There's a lot of families there, and there's a lot of people who are looking to also be professional, take the sport seriously. So like we have a great mix of competitors, and we got some amateur champions that we just got crowned, and it's been fun, man. It's like a awesome project that I'm doing on the side, but I'm all over, man. I have real estate. I've like a few bar restaurants. I have some real estate ventures that I do, but I'm really like, I got a lot of plates spinning outside of fighting, and I've always have kind of invested my fight money here over there. But right now I just been building my Performance Institute and showing the next generation, the next group, how to get this done. The other people want to be champions. You just learn how to fight.
Yeah, I love that. Give back what you can to the sport. And obviously you have a great mind for it. Are you still like under contract with BKFC, or are you free to do whatever you want if something interesting does come up?
I've never been in contract with anyone for years. I just said I'll fight, and then I'm not signing any deal with anyone for anything. So I've been open for years. But I mean, BKFC is my baby. There's no sport like it, and I had a blast, like, kind of doing these fights. Like, I had a freaking ton of fun. Me and Mark Henry had a blast doing them. So you never know. They call me. Who knows what's gonna go on? But for right now, I'm having a good time at the gym. I honestly been lifting a bunch of weights. I've been lifting weights and helping these fighters get ready, and it's been fun doing that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very rewarding, especially, you know, some of the guys that are coming up in the Philly area. It's a very strong time for mixed martial arts there. So you must be very proud, Eddie. Yeah. Definitely, if anyone wants to know more about the gym, I'm sure you can find it on your social medias, E. Alvarez Fight, anywhere like that. I'm sure there's a website, all that stuff too, Eddie. So I appreciate you taking the time being here, going through these rankings. I will take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. All right, we are back here on the bonfire. Thank you so much to Eddie Alvarez for his time. Thought that was a great conversation. Would love to know what you guys thought about our top 10 double champ lists there. How would yours compare? Why not? Type out yours in the comments. Let me know what the criteria you decide to follow, and would be curious how those stack up to what we did there. Really appreciate Eddie, but we still have a little more business to attend to here on this episode. As I mentioned off the top, no Megan Olivi here for the half year awards, but I want to highlight a few categories, a few achievements, and a few people for what they've done from January until now as we sit here at the half year on a UFC off week. Looking forward to seeing what is to come in the second portion of the schedule. But as we look back here, I will hand out a quick few awards here. Knockout of the half year, I think it's got to be Ilya Topuria against what he did against Charles Oliveira. Just a vicious one-punch knockout. As I said to Eddie, there hasn't been many knockouts at all in UFC title fights in the past 7 months. The only one to get it on that level. I always, as I say, when I do these type of awards, try to adhere by the three S's, and that is my criteria: stakes, significance, and style. Well, for Ilya Topuria, the style of how he knocked out Charles Oliveira, unreal visual, violent stuff. The stakes could not have been any higher, a championship fight. And the significance, we know, we just talked about it, the first undefeated two-division UFC champion. So hard to top for Ilya Topuria. Of course, the other great knockout of the year probably came just a few fights prior. Gregory Rodriguez absolutely flatlining Jack Hermanson. You just put style. Whew, that one's a hard one to top. What a vicious knockout. Just the stakes, significance, not quite there to top Topuria, in my opinion. Another honorable mention shout out, Mauricio Hufi, for that spinning wheel kick knockout of Bobby Green. That was violent, violent stuff that he pulled off. So shout outs to those three. I think those are the best UFC knockouts we've had so far in the half year. On to submission. This was a little bit of a trickier one. I think my winner so far is going to be John Silva defeating Bryce Mitchell at UFC 314, choking him out cold, sending him down to the bantamweight division. Just a vicious, vicious submission. Stands over top of him, barks at him. We all know the angst that was leading into that fight. A lot of people wanted to see Bryce Mitchell get done like that, and John Silva delivered. significance leads him into probably a title eliminator against Diego Lopez at Noche UFC, which was announced this past week as well. An honorable mention for submission, I will throw to Merab Dvalishvili for his finish of Sean O'Malley to defend his title at UFC 316. I mean, what more can you say? Merab getting a finish in any fashion is notable for him to defeat Sean O'Malley, who was so much more prepared for this title fight than he was the original meeting, or at least so he said. No excuses in the aftermath, giving Merab all the credit. Great choke, great way for Merab to add more dynamic threats to his overall arsenal. So to see him get a finish in a title fight against a Sean O'Malley who had never been submitted before and said he was prepared for it all, that gets major, major applause from me as an honorable mention there. So continue down the list here. Fight of the half year. This one was tricky as well. And I feel like I'm continuing to hit recency bias here. But man, tell me a better fight than Joshua Van and Brandon Royval at UFC 317. Set all sorts of records, most notably most total significant strikes combined, 441, I believe. That is the most for a three-round UFC fight. So historic output. We saw both their faces after. That was a bloody banger. Amazing stuff. Rightfully got fight of the night at UFC 317 and probably the fight of the half year, just given the level of both those fighters, the number one contender stakes involved, and just a remarkable fight. Some honorable mentions, though, that were worthy for their more action. Maybe not as high a stakes these next couple. Nazim Sadyakov versus Nicholas Mota out there at UFC Baku. Double bonuses for those guys. Nicholas Mota, I believe, the only fighter in UFC history to get two bonuses, a fight of the night and a performance of the night in a loss. So major shout out for that. Yeah, that was a crazy fight. If not for Van versus Royval, that would have been number one here. A couple other honorable mentions. Marco Tullio defeat Trayshawn Gore at UFC 314. Somehow did not even get fight of the night there, but was a very nice prelim fight. Maybe the best prelim fight we've had so far this year. Maybe I'm just speaking out of turn, but that one stands out to me. And then the only championship fight that made the fight of the half year list for me was back in January. Another Merab Dvalishvili mention. His fight versus Umar Nurmagomedov was extremely high level, did not have the damage, the knockdowns, the violence of some of these other ones I mentioned, but in terms of being a high level title fight, five rounds, technical prowess everywhere, striking, grappling, clinch work, everything you could want out of a mixed martial arts fight. Those two delivered back there at Intuit Dome in January. And to close out the half year awards here on the bonfire, fighter of the half year, this one easy for me, it is Merab Dvalishvili, aforementioned, gets his name thrown out in the submission category, fight category, and now the fighter category. The only person in the world in the UFC with two title defenses in the calendar year so far. That's hard to beat. Serious threats to the reign. Of course, Umar Nurmagomedov, he was the underdog going into that one. Yeah, a lot of people thought he would do in Sean O'Malley again, but maybe didn't expect that degree of dominance. And for him, of course, to finish the fight with his submission was huge. I've said for ages, it's really hard to stay at the top of this bantamweight division. I thought there would be turnover very often. Merab Dvalishvili has proved me wrong. And to get these two title defenses, very, very impressive, especially the January one against Umar, limited camp, hand injury, all those things. We know how good Umar Nurmagomedov is. So that alone would have had him in the running. But add a second title defense in there, unquestionable fighter of the half year. Some other mentions you could throw. Joshua Van, 3-0 so far in the year. Definitely activity. The last win here against Royval definitely levels up his case. He would have maybe been the front runner here if Merab didn't have two title defenses under his waist, but here we are. Joshua Van might be tough to unseat him if he gets his title fight this year and wins against Pantoja, but it's a lot of ifs. We shall see if Merab gets one or two more this year. Whew, he will be undeniable. I'm not letting anyone take fighter of the year from Merab Dvalishvili if he does it twice. I know on the podcast with Dean Thomas a couple of years ago, he said Jack Del Maddaleta, if he beats Islam and Bilal in the year, maybe. But if Merab gets four, no way. He's getting fighter of the year. Last honorable mention in that category, we'll go to Ilya Topuria. One fight only, was 2 minutes or so, but whew, tell me a more high profile win this year. He's got to be the guy in that category, at least to get a honorable mention. Female fighter of the half year, not much to speak of. I guess Kayla Harrison will take the cake there, gets the title fight and a finish, something Valentina Shevchenko and Zhang Weili were unable to do in their title defenses. So that is that. Those are the half year awards here on the Bonfire. And our last bit of housekeeping here that I mentioned off the top, I just wanted to, I guess, give you guys an update on, as we hit the half year mark here, who have been the most active fighters, who have been the best winners so far in the UFC. And there's only been a handful of fighters who have had three fights this year, a very small group. And those are Mekaquilzil Costa. I'm butchering that name. I'm sorry to you, Mr. Costa. I've had troubles typing and pronouncing your name, but he fought three times this year, went 2-1. And then there's Kevin Holland, who is 3-0 so far this year. Joshua Vance, 3-0 this year, and had three fights. Those are the three guys who've had three fights at the midway part of the year. We'll see. Joshua Van probably going to get four. Who knows with Kevin Holland? Kevin Holland could get five or maybe even six. He is scheduled for the fourth. That was just recently announced against Daniel Rodriguez at UFC 318, just in a few weeks here. Kevin Holland, half year, going to have four fights. So I'm not going to put a cap on him. No one has ever gone better than five fights or 5-0 in a year. Modern era. Maybe this is Kevin Holland's moment, and he is one of the two fighters who has accomplished that previously. You look a bit down, who have the other guys who have been active? So there's been 56 fighters who have fought twice this year, who fit in that column. Plenty of others who have only had the one fight, but people two or three fights. The three mentioned prior, the 23 as follows, who have gone 2-0 this year. Of that group of 56 with two fights are Terrence McKinney, Mirab Davalishvili, Markel Medeiros, Alonzo Menafield, Mansur Abdul Malik, Haoni Barcelos, Azamat Bakoyev, Damone Blackshear, Wang Kong, Waldo Cortez Acosta, Jose Delgado, Rainier de Ritter, Jasmine Jazdavicius, Mohamed Naimov, Nursultan Ruzaboyev, Nazim Sadyakov, Killian Silicade, Myron Santos, Edmund Shabazian, Ricky Simone, Jacoby Smith, who was very impressive over the weekend, Marco Tullio, Tagir Ulanbekov, and Malcolm Wellmaker, who I probably should have gave an honorable mention in the knockout of the year, half year category too as well. But those are the guys who I guess are the names to watch for having really impactful years. Everyone else who's competed twice is either 0-2 or 1-1. I didn't want to list out all the names. I'll maybe do something again on this towards the end of the year, but just wanted to give you guys an activity update as we hit the half year point. Let me know if you're interested in this type of information, who can maybe have great standout years. Is any of those guys that I mentioned going to go from 2-0 to 3-0, maybe 4-0? We'll see what Kevin Holland and Joshua Van can do in terms of being the most active fighters. But yeah, this has been solid. I always keep saying I've hammered this drum almost any time I've got a microphone in front of me in recent months. The biggest key, I think, to helping UFC get more traction, notoriety, interest from fans is having the same crop of fighters compete as often as possible. The roster is too bloated. There's too many guys, not enough fights, not enough fight cards, not enough things to keep them relevant. You got to trim down the roster. You got to have these same people being as active as possible. If you could have 30 fighters who fight at least 3 to 4 times, that's an upgrade. So we'll see what they can do. We'll see what the scheduling looks like the back half of this year. Of course, we have Contender Series starting in a few short weeks here. Going to be a whole lot of roster signings and turnover coming off that. We'll see. We'll see what they can do if they're listening, because I do feel like we're starting to see a little more consistency out of our athletes. So what gets you far in this game? It's being a fighter who fights. That's all I can say. So appreciate everyone tuning in. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend. If you're in the United States, happy Canada Day. If you're a fellow Canadian, and yeah, enjoy the fightless weekend. It is back to a streak of event after event after event after this one. So enjoy the rare summer break, because they are few and far between. For now, appreciate everyone tuning in. Appreciate the time from Eddie Alvarez. And until next week, we will see you back here by the Bonfire.